Hello and welcome to Talk Tonight Sports. This is a bit of a weird one today because you're probably used to hearing Liam's voice, but it's actually me, Harry, doing a podcast with Sam, who is the creator of Back of the Net. So how did it all come about?
Yeah, so Back of the Net was a podcast that just an audio pod that started back in 2016, which all covered everything to do with AFC Bournemouth. And we found at the time that there was one podcast, but we wanted to sort of add a unique take on what it's like to support our club and do features behind the scenes. And it's really taken off, and it's grown from strength to strength, really. We had a bit of a break, and then we came back a few seasons ago, and we've now got a YouTube channel as a result of it, which has probably taken over the actual viewership or listenership of, of all the stuff we do. So it's all been geared towards giving supporters a voice, bringing a community together, which has been needed in this last year more than ever, and trying to, tell the world the joys of supporting AFC Bournemouth.
Yeah, and there are some joys, but obviously the past, is it 18 months, is it?
Yeah,
Yeah, I haven't
great.
been. Haven't been great, but
No.
you've got to stick by your team, haven't you?
Yeah.
Was it like what made you do the come away from just doing the audio podcast or doing like this whole big platform in the end? Was it like any other like fan channels that the other like teams inspire you to do it?
Yeah, one thing. Supporting AFC Bournemouth, like it's a small, for people who don't know, it's a very small club with a small fan base, and we've always been small, and then we've had this fairy tale rise up to the top division that culminated in 2015 when we got promoted to the Premier League. And even still, we had barely any social media presence at all in terms of unofficial stuff. I mean, obviously the club have got their own channels, but in terms of fan channels, there was nothing. There was one podcast. And then we came along, so that made it two. But on YouTube, there was nothing. And the podcast was good, and it got some good downloads. But I find that podcasts, when you've got it like on your app, it's quite an investment, and you sort of like have a look through the list, and you think, yeah, I'll subscribe to that. But they're not things you can easily dip in and dip out of. So I
No.
thought, why not just like do YouTube, and we can do any videos. We can put our podcast content on there as well. And it's one of those things you don't have a commitment with. You can scroll through, you can see the thumbnail. You either click it or you don't. If you don't like the first 10 seconds of a video, you can click off it and watch something else. And it was just about, building more awareness of AFC Bournemouth and our sort of passion for AFC Bournemouth through the YouTube channel. And I mean, it's really taken off.
Yeah, but leading on from taking off, you say you're proud of where it's come in like sort of like a short space of time. I know you've been doing it since 2016, but this side of it's sort of
Yeah.
just gone like a bit mental, hasn't it?
It has really. The channel launched in August 2019. I didn't know what to expect. And I'm not overly narcissistic or anything, but it needs a person to be the front man. And I've done sort of various interviews and stuff before. So I just thought, you know what? I'll put my face to it. But if I can get a team together to sort of take it forward, hopefully that will, prevent people getting bored of seeing my mug on screen all the time. So, we just put it on, and from sort of zero subscribers in August 2019, we're nearly at 3,000, which is a year and a bit, which
Yeah, that's quite a good
for
growth.
like a year and a half, and for a club our size, I'd say it's pretty good. Now, if we were Arsenal, Man United, Chelsea, Spurs, Liverpool, I'm sure that I could have started up a channel and probably be about 15,000 by now, but it's just the nature of the club. It's very small, so it's always ever going to be a slow burner.
Yeah, exactly. Like so, yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? Like with Bournemouth, yeah, so we still are tiny, even like now, when having been in the Premier League and that. And yeah, so I just wanted to hear your thoughts about the past 18 months, really, from when Eddie left to with what's gone on recently. It's just been a bit. I'm gonna say the word
Yeah.
again. Bit mental, isn't it? It's just.
Yeah.
It's just been like kind of like a roller coaster, isn't it? Because Eddie leaving was obviously a shock. Just how random it was. There wasn't like any murmurings about it, was there? It was just bang, done. There it is.
Yeah.
One random Saturday night in August or July, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was horrible. And thing is, for a lot of fans, Eddie Howe is all they've ever known, and he is the football club. Mm. And the football club was built around him. He was the rock. Slogans on the walls, the way the, you know, the trees that were planted around the training ground, like all sorts of decisions like that ultimately came down to him. He was the first person in at 6 a.m. in the morning. He was the last person to leave at 7 p.m. at night. He was committed more than I've ever heard. And you know what? We've interviewed loads of people. No one's got a bad word to say about him whatsoever. He was the heartbeat of the club. And when you've got a club that's built around one man, it means when that person goes, you're going to struggle. And when he did go, it was horrible. It was like a death in the family. And then, you know, that mixed with COVID as well. I know that 2,000 or so people went to Dean Court to watch matches when fans were allowed in stadiums, like 10% or whatever it was. But a lot of us are going to be returning to a completely different club with no Eddie on the touchline, no Jason. It's going to be so weird. So weird.
Yeah. So in the last time I went to a game, obviously Eddie was in charge, and just like, yeah, it was just weird, isn't it? It's just mad just to see him like go. But I think in some sort of way you could tell, though, because of the way he looked, he looked knackered.
He did.
Like, he had players that didn't want to be here to deal with, and still trying to make the rest of the team play. And then obviously relegation happened, and obviously, yeah, it's heartbreaking to see him go through the stress he went through just to try and keep us up.
I think he made such a commitment to the club, you know, probably emotionally more than anything. And he had a hand in every department. As I said, the club was built around him. And I think it takes its toll. So when your team is in a downward spiral, it can affect you because you're not just thinking about the football. He's like such a nice guy and he's got such a high moral compass that he's also thinking, oh my God, if we get relegated to the Championship, you know, that person that works in the club shop will probably get, you know, you sacked off, their P45 will come through the post. And there's so many staff around the club that he's ultimately responsible for, even though he's just in control of the football mentally, he's in control of everyone. And it took its toll. And that, together with the whole social distancing thing and with COVID, I think it just, you know, it broke him. And he looked like a broken man. And time and time again, we always relied on him being our saviour. And he always got us out of a situation, but it was just one step too far. And he looked knackered. But you know, from my perspective, I'm sort of glad he's taken that time out because he seems rejuvenated. Seen him on the TV recently, seems like a different man.
Yeah, where do you think he'd go next?
That's a weird one, isn't it? Like, there were murmurings of Celtic.
I think too far, isn't it?
If you don't like Burnley as being north, then you wouldn't like Celtic. I think the next feasible option is somewhere like Crystal Palace, maybe. Yes. A club like that's been touted. It's London. He could probably commute, you know, whether he would sort of live a bit closer to London, I'm not sure. But it's the kind of size of club and with the financial backing where he could try to make it a top 10 club. I'm not really sure what kind of, you know, I think he probably could go higher than that, really. A sort, you know, a team like a West Ham, but they're doing really well at the moment. Yeah. So, or a Leicester or somewhere like that. Crystal Palace, like a couple of seasons ago, they weren't that much different to us. It would be an interesting move. But if he wants Premier League football, then, you know, I'm sure he'll make that decision.
Do you think he's had any, like, calls to come into job now? Or do you think he's just been like, nah, I'm not till this summer? Like, he'll probably have like a year off, won't he?
I think he will. I think he would enjoy having that time off that he's had. He admitted publicly that he's enjoyed spending time with his wife Vicky and his kids, and being able to, you know, play tennis with them down the park and stuff. And he's got all that family time back, and he's in no real rush. Let's face it, he's financially secure, and he's waiting for the right position. And he's not the type of manager that needs to be in football.
No,
he wants to be in football, but he'll take the right job for him and, you know, the right fit. And it's almost like clubs will have to bend over backwards for him, whereas sometimes you get the impression that managers will bend over backwards to, you know, to be the right man for said club.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, because I think there was, I think I saw something, it's Talk Sports, I don't know if it was true, about Bristol City wanting him.
Apparently so, but he turned them down. So they had him and Nigel Pearson on their want list, and Eddie was just like, nah, I'm not doing it. So it's not the club for him, is it? You know, Premier League, or whether the Celtic thing will happen or not, I don't know. But it's, I would think it's probably just a waiting game for the right Premier League club.
Do you think he could do internationals? There's obviously the England talk, wasn't there, a while back? That could be something, but I don't know if the experience thing, but you look at Gareth Northgate, it's exactly the kind of their past run similar, don't they?
Because
he got sacked from there, and then he went into the England setup, didn't he? And then he made his way up through there, and then now look where he is.
Yeah, the England position is a funny one, because I wasn't sure how long Gareth Southgate was going to stay on. And I know the last World Cup we got to the semi-finals, but I wasn't actually overly convinced with how England played. We were sort of lucky to get through to where we did based on the teams that we played. At the end of the day, I think we only beat two teams in 90 minutes twice, and that was Sweden in the quarterfinals and Panama when we won 6-1 or whatever it was. Tunisia, the first match which we did win, we scored in stoppage time, so that's not strictly 90 minutes, but we scraped through some games. Of course, there were penalties and two Belgium losses, yet we were semi-finalists. Absolutely weird.
Wasn't, I think, a strong World Cup, was it? I don't know, France won it in the end, didn't they? Quite convincingly, I think.
But I would love Eddie in the England job. I think he would be amazing. Whether it will happen or not, you know, I don't think it would happen straight away. I think he needs another club between now and then. But when people mention who next for the England job, his name is always mentioned, and he will always be like, he'll always be on the odds list on Sky Bet or whatever, but he's not going to be at the top. He'll be like fourth or fifth even at the moment, but he needs to take another job, and then it'll be one of the favourites.
I think it's because, like, obviously he's English and the style of football he plays as well. I think England have the players that would suit that brand of football so well. And that's why I think we're a bit, as we are boring to watch, aren't we?
Yeah. It's so weird, the England job, because, you know, I look back and I think, how on earth did Sam Allardyce get the job? I know it's only for one game, but his teams are not exactly that free-flowing attacking brand of football that you would expect. And given the players that England had under his disposal at the time, it was just, why have we got this guy? I mean, as that happened, I think Lallana scored a last-minute goal in his only game in charge, and he's got 100% win record, and then he was out 24 hours later. But I would love Eddie in that role, but time will tell on that.
Yeah. So back to your podcast, you mentioned that you've had guests on, and you've had some pretty big guests. One of them is Brian Cox. Like, how did that happen? That's mad. And when I saw that, I was like, how have they done that? How has Sam done that?
it's so random, because you know, all of the content that we've been putting out is fan-based stuff, fan-based reaction videos, supporters chatting to each other, match day vlogs. And then when lockdown happened, it forced us to do more stuff online. So we've got some software that we use regularly for a post-match chat. We thought, you know what, why don't we try to, you know, tap up some people to chat to. So Matt Holland was the first one, and that was just through an email or through Twitter. And then we built our way up, some ex-Bournemouth players, Matt Ritchie, Harry Redknapp, which was huge. And then it was a case of doing opposition previews this season. We thought, you know, why don't we mix it up by asking some celebrity names just to see. So like Monty Panesar supports Luton, for example. Bill Turnbull, the ex-BBC Breakfast presenter, he's a Wickham fan. Nick Owen, a BBC newsreader, he's obviously heavily involved at Luton. And then we were looking up celebrity fans for Oldham. Craig, who ran the show, was like, Brian Cox, like, never even knew he liked football. And it was a simple tweet, just a tweet that said, hi, Brian, here's a link to one of our previous videos with one of the most famous guests that we had. So whichever video we had done that was the most famous, that would be the one we'd send to a celeb, because they'd be like, okay, these guys are the real deal.
Yeah.
You know, like your video that you done with like Frank Turner, you know, that, you know, it's for me, that's just like Frank Turner, bloody hell, I'm going to do this. And yeah, he said, yes. It's just like, and you know, them saying yes is one thing, but then like turning up and hearing the little ping, okay, they're in the room. That was just like amazing. And then he talked about football a little bit, but obviously we had to gear it towards what he's all about. So science and astronomy and all that. It was brilliant.
Yeah, that's mad. So, like, how did you? One that always works for us trying to work out how you got was Matt Ritchie, because that is someone with no social media at all. How did that come about?
So that was, and you're right. Some players don't have social media, and a lot of them don't have it because they find it quite toxic. And we've been chatting to a few people recently, ex-players, who said it's just not worth it because it really does affect you. So if you're a football fan and you're thinking of like tagging someone and, you know, calling them horrible things, have a think about it, because it does actually mentally affect them.
Like, they do. That's why, don't
they? Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. 100%.
The one the other day, but not going to repeat what was said, because that was,
yeah, I was, believe it. I was bad.
Like, no, I know, like, it's not a great time for the fans at the moment, but there's a
even still, there. It's no excuse. But yeah, Matt Ritchie's not on social media for that reason. And it's just, we ask the people that have taken part, oh, have you got blah, blah's number or whatever? So through Tommy Elphick, we got Mark Pugh. Through Mark Pugh, we got you know, some other players like Matt Ritchie, like Jan Kermigan. And then it's just a sort of chain reaction. And when there's a good feedback you get from one person saying, oh, you know what, that was really good, then, you know, it builds. So that meant that we could interview club captain Simon Francis, and there are other names that we've got in the pipeline for the future that hopefully will recommend us, and, you know, we can do them as well. Because at the end of the day, it's not about us chatting to famous people. It's about the fans being able to hear their story, and I think they're loving it so far.
Yeah, no, they are really good. Like, judging like the reactions you get from,
yeah,
like the little teasers you put out, like everyone's always really buzzing. It's nice to see, because like, the club aren't very good with, at the moment anyway, with giving that connection feeling. But I feel like your like podcast does that. It sort of replaces it. So I feel like, oh, you know, this is as close as we're going to get to a club at the moment. Because,
yeah,
the club's quite useless.
It's,
in a way,
it's sort of grown into that, maybe unintentionally, but it's strange, because now the burden of responsibility, I feel it more to produce more of these things that bring the fans together and the post-match chats. And now I'm even thinking ahead, thinking, okay, now even when we're back at stadiums, I'm going to be standing outside the stand with a microphone interviewing fans as they leave. But what about the thousands of people around the world that still want to have their say now? I can't be in two places at once. I'm thinking, maybe I'll need to get someone to run the post-match show and we can do a mixture of them both. So I'm thinking ahead about the things that we can do to improve the experience and to get as many fans feeling involved as possible.
What did you do when, obviously you've built quite a big, reasonably sized team now. So what did you have to, like, did people come to you to be part, or did you approach them?
I think that it's just a case of, it started off with my mates really, and people that I knew, and then like friends of friends came on. And then, you know, on Twitter there's a lot of, you know, respected fans that have got big followings, and then, you know, you ask them on, and just the people that are just nice people and, you know, good people, I'll ask them on, and then friends of friends get involved, and before long you get a regular sort of group of people that sort of want to be involved. And by that time I sort of then gauged who would be committed to be doing this as basically a free project and taking it forward into something that might earn a few quid. It's, you know, if it does get to that, absolutely superb, but that's not what it's going to be about. I mean, it would help pay for the software that we use, it might help pay for our time, even might help pay for a match ticket. But it's more about, you know, giving it to the fans that are starved of AFC Bournemouth content. So we've got a team of like four people now that contribute as much to each other. We may even grow it a bit further. We don't know. We find that if your team's too big, sometimes it can get out of control. So we're quite happy as a four at the moment, and just, you know, see where it takes us really.
Yeah, we've just yeah, we've just done branched out. So it's obviously me and the co-creator, then we got someone else. We've had a few people dip in and out.
Yeah.
So now I think we've got like a solid, there's five of us, I think.
Yeah.
And that's a good amount of people because obviously I'm all right at the moment because I'm furloughed. But yeah, when I get back to work, that's that much time.
Yeah.
To that.
Yeah. And that's what it might be for us as well. Mm. And I'll be wary of that. But you know, I've got a number of trusted people that I could then bring in at that point to deputise. And I mean, I suppose at the end of the day, like even the people that I've got, you know, contributing regularly to the channel, you know, I could still like run it, like even on my own if I had to. That's the kind of nature it is, because I can just get fans on just to talk, and that's what people just want to do: talk about football. And for that, you don't really need a team. But it's when you're starting to have to worry about social media output, like email newsletters, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, and all that lot. Then it starts to get like, oh God, I haven't done that. Can you quickly do that? And organizing interviews as well. Mm. You know, I always try to reply to every single person that contacts through Twitter or Facebook, and that's a job in itself.
Yeah.
So it's hard, but you know, like, even though it takes up a lot of time, even though it doesn't pay, I still really like it, and I like it because everyone likes it.
I feel mine. I know, like my our podcast and your podcast are different, but they're kind of similar the same way.
Yeah,
because it's what we're about. We want to give unsigned acts and bands a platform to get their music heard, and we want to promote that. Whereas you is just like, you want to give fans that wouldn't usually do like give their opinion and that a platform, which is, they're quite parallel, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's, you know, like, it's your baby as well. Mm. So you know, you're proud of all your output. Your branding is on point. You've got merch. Like I think like the way you're, you know, deviating into other genres, like with the sports thing recently, I think it's been a really good idea. And you know, you've got a really good team there. And it's just a case of keep on putting it out relentlessly, and just you're trying to improve on what you did last, and then, you know, people will come.
So I just remember, like, when I started it, or when we started it, and we were using Skype, and obviously the sound quality was awful. and then we found out about Zoom, and then we're like, oh, okay, yeah, Zoom's really good. You know, it's easy for what we want to do, etc. And now we're trying to look for the next step higher, which will obviously be face-to-face interviews, but obviously we can't at the moment.
Well, what I'm seeing at the moment is a better setup than what I've got, because you've got like a proper decent microphone, you've got a muffler, you seem to have a proper stand going on, and you know, ultimately that's where we want to take our stuff, because I don't know about you, but I love the YouTube videos where there's like three or four people sat around a table. You know, you can see the microphones. It's not necessarily these kind of, you know, in microphones, lapel mics or whatever. They're just a real raw format. Four guys like sat around the table talking football, you're talking whatever. I really like that idea, and that's what I would like to have for us at some point in time. But obviously that's not been possible recently. But maybe when we're allowed back, which could be sooner rather than later, then perhaps it could happen.
The thing with podcasting is like it's not that hard to do. Like if you want to it's so easy. Like when we first started, like I said, we were on Skype, and first I was just using my phone. That was it.
Yeah.
And obviously we started getting really into it, and like, right, okay, we should probably invest in some microphones. It's just doing little steps. Like obviously microphones, some can be cheap, some can be expensive. This one was middle of the road, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just building slowly and slowly. And I think if your listeners and viewers see that you're putting the time in and then the money into it as well, and trying to enhance your, like, I don't know, what's the word? Sort of like make your platform better, then they will appreciate the effort you're putting in. And I think that's what you get, to get like a core listenership and viewership.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I mean, I don't use professional equipment even now. I could do have some fairly okay equipment. But the thing is, right, what we do is every Saturday after a game, a number of us will get together and we'll chat about the game for about 45 minutes. And we'll, at the moment, we're doing it all in remote locations. The video goes onto YouTube on Sunday.
Yeah.
And then I just grab the audio from that. And that's like 45 minutes of your podcast. I will record an intro on my phone. You're just on the voice notes app. I will shove a mic muffler in it on the end. And I'll just do the whole, you know, like I'll do all the links. Hello, welcome to episode 115 of Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast. On this episode, and I'll just freestyle it. And then I'll do the bit at the end. So I've got two audio files. I've got the main chunk of the show and I've got one audio file, which I just need to split into half. It goes at the start, half it goes at the end. You put the jingles on, I'm out of there, I'm done. And there's no reason to complicate it at the moment.
No.
Maybe if someone else comes along and sort of ups their game, perhaps I'll do that. But at the moment, I haven't got time to. And whilst the YouTube stuff is more viewed than, you know, what is happening on the podcast, then I'm going to concentrate on that. But I will always have it because that's where we started. I don't want to not have an audio pod. Like
with this, like we said we'd never not use Zoom because obviously there are people that you just can't meet up with. Obviously, we've done people that are in, like, we've done a band that was in, like, Israel. Obviously,
wow.
Yeah, and then got someone from America. So, like, obviously, you just can't go meet up with those people. And that's where Zoom is quite good, or very good for that. It's just when we want to do bands that are, like down here, because my co-partner lives up north. And obviously I'm down here and the other people are scattered around the UK, which could be quite good for us because you have people from all four corners.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of we've made a rod for our own back really with all this online stuff because now we've sort of realized, oh my God, like we really do need to cater for more fans because every day after a game, we do this show called a free-for-all where it's a free-for-all. We give someone a link and they can come on and say what they want to say and then they can go. It's an hour long and we'll get through like all people. There's people calling from all over the place. There's a guy that calls from Latvia, a guy that calls from Italy, one from Washington, from Florida, from North Carolina, from all corners of the UK. It's like one from France, people from Australia, New Zealand. It's like, okay. But now that we've done this, we can't just go back and just not talk to those people. So we're going to have to keep doing these kind of shows, but it's a great thing. It's a great thing to bring people together and, you know, long may the whole sort of podcast and YouTube like thing continue really.
Cause once you like, I think you just got to like what I've done. Like I used to get quite not wound up, but a bit annoyed with like views, etc. like that. But I think once you try and get that mindset where you just want to do it for yourself, it's probably one of the best things I've started.
Yeah, I agree. Like I now no longer look at views. I used to look at views of like the big sort of major thing, but now in YouTube at least I have a look at a video and if it's only got 100 views or whatever, I'm like, okay, but how many subscribers did it add? And if it added 5 subscribers, I think that's good. That's 5 more subscribers that are basically going to be along for the ride now. So I don't worry about the views. But the fact is, the more subscribers you get, your views will like slowly rise anyway. So there are videos that I put out now that I have got a sort of a kind of minimum limit now in my mind. Okay. Videos that perform under a certain amount of views, you know, they're probably just not working as well. Maybe we need to scrap that idea. But I still always look at the subscriber count as well. So it is a mix. I mean, I don't know what podcast platform provider you, I mean, we know how many downloads we get per show, but we don't know how many people are subscribed as such. All we just know is like how many downloads we get. I don't know if that's the same for you.
We use for like Spotify and Apple, we use Anchor.
Yeah.
And I think it just says how many listens it has. And then it's got a chart. Goes up and down, so we just look at it like that.
Yeah.
And then YouTube, we sort of go on and off of YouTube.
Yeah.
We sort of went off it for a bit. We thought, oh, people sometimes people just don't want to sit and watch a podcast. They're very much like whack it on Spotify, listen to it in parts, or be on the way to work, etc. like that. And then we start, and then we said, oh, maybe we should do a couple, like when they're big artists, we'll put them on YouTube.
Yeah.
Etc. So we just change it up every now and then.
Yeah, we I find that the podcast listens like tend to vary, and some shows have done really well and others that haven't sort of done as much. But one thing we did that, you know, you might want to do, it's a real interesting thing to do, is just create an anonymous feedback form and send it to your listeners via social media and say, look, we want some feedback on what we put out. You don't have to put your name. Just tell us what we do well, tell us what we do badly, tell us where we need to improve, and just hit the submit button. We had so many back, and it makes us analyze our performance and think, oh my god, like, do I do that, or oh no, that show's not so good. And it's kind of making us analyze it and improve what we do, because even though I watch things back that I present myself sometimes, not all the time, I don't tend to pick up on the things I do that are annoying, but then other people will. So then I know next time I won't do that. And then hopefully, you know, the more professional you get, the more people will end up tuning in.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's why we tried to like up our game. We're like, right, like the whole Skype thing, we're like, right, we need to try and do something to put us on another level. And this is how this is, because we don't have that many subscribers. Like, we hit over, I think we got 1,000 and something now.
Yeah.
Which obviously is quite good for a year.
I did a Skype interview once, because we use another tool now, but I did a Skype one. It was a three-way one, and I don't know why, and I wasn't sure how to change it, but I was half the screen, and then I had a co-presenter who was a quarter of the screen, and the main person that we were interviewing was like on a quarter of the screen. It's like, why can't he shift over to here and be the focus? It was so annoying, but I couldn't change it. And Skype is not that flexible at all.
No, it's not. And then once we realized that, we're like, oh, because it like sort of does something to the sound as well.
Yeah.
And after listening to a recording back, we're like, oh no.
You can tell that it's weird. The audio is definitely weird.
No, so moving on to back to the football club, obviously Eddie left. What do you think the actual story is behind that? Because obviously no one knows, like it was just so random. But do you think he was pushed, or do you think he just was like, I can't do it anymore, I'm just going to walk?
I honestly don't know
now, haven't they, of head coach?
Yeah,
which I noticed.
I think it was probably a combination of factors. I mean, I've got to say that I'm, despite the fact I talk about it 24/7 on the podcast and YouTube, I'm not a fan that's in the know. And I quite like not being in the know, because it means that I can react like a fan rather than some kind of amateur journalist, which I'm not. I can be a fan. I don't want to be contacting people within the club. I do, you know, sometimes if I need to, I will, but I don't want to be this person that's always contacting people within the club, because I, you know, I want to be a fanboy. When I see players walking down the street, I still, you know, like almost go giddy. And that's what I want to be. I don't want to be texting them or whatever, like, you know, like they're my mate. Because otherwise, you know, like I still want to be a fan of a football club. And as such, I'm not party to what really happened. I think that he probably wanted certain assurances that weren't there. Let's face it, when Jason Tindall came in, he was given absolutely nothing. It's not like they would have given Eddie loads of money and, you know, all of a sudden they'd have taken it away for JT. I just suspect that they were trying to tighten the purse strings in the first place, and he couldn't work with that. There were maybe some, not the assurances over the training ground that he needed, and and certain things in place. And, you know, I think he probably just like self-analyzed with his wife and family over that week where there was that uncertainty. And whilst we all thought he's going to stay, the club put out this press release saying, we're committed to getting AFC Bournemouth back in the Premier League, which is what they would say anyway. And then next weekend he's gone. It was a shock, but it was the right decision for him. So ultimately, I, in a way, I don't sort of care why it happened, because the right thing happened for him. So
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And then obviously there was that time thing, oh, who are we gonna get? A few names mentioned, like John Terry, etc. And then everyone looking at the Sky Bet odds list every like day, and oh, he's top. He wasn't top yesterday, but I think it's just simply people lumping money on, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And then they opted for the guy that was there as his number two for, you know, goodness knows how long. And I can see why they do it. He was the cheap option. He knew all the squad. It wasn't like they have to bring in, if they bring in a new manager, then that's all their coaching staff as well. And you've got to get rid of a load of coaching staff. It's a big expense. Mm-hmm. With COVID, there was only like 5 weeks until the season started. Jason Tindall knows his squad inside out. The squad, you know, was harmonious. Well, he didn't play like it was harmonious towards the end of last season, but he's someone that knows their strengths and weaknesses. And I thought, you know what? The quality of the squad could potentially carry Tindall through the season. Yeah. But as it happened, they didn't. I wouldn't say they downed tools, but they just haven't been at the races. And ultimately, no. JT was the one that paid the price.
It's just weird, isn't it? Like, I can only think of one game under Tindall where we played well, and that's when we beat Huddersfield.
Yeah, and that was in front of fans. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it shows how important the fans are. And in fact, that was the last time that Bournemouth won two in a row as well, in the league, that is. Yeah. That was when fans were in the stadium, Huddersfield and Wickham. Other than that, we've been struggling, and you know, the performances were getting worse. It was a bit like the start of last season in a way, like the league position was masking how bad we are. And bad's a strong word for this season, because we were in fourth, fifth, sixth, but given the quality that you've got, then it's like, yeah, it's not great. It's, you know, it's having all the ingredients to make the perfect loaf of bread, and then it comes out to like tasting absolutely crap. You know, we have everything, but you know, the baker, Jason Tindall, was just, yeah, he was not up to the job. So
no.
He had to go, but then
the right decision in the end.
Probably, although a bit slightly underwhelmed with his replacement, because we're picking another internal candidate again, another manager with no experience. The last time we employed a manager of any experience was back in 1995, which was Mel Machin. I suppose you could argue that when Eddie returned from Burnley, he had experience, but I'm not counting the return. But yeah, you're looking at it, and it's always been people like promoted from within. And you know, for all Woodgate's experience, you might as well have just kept Tindall on. But I don't know, mate. Time will tell.
Like with Woodgate, like he's done all right, obviously. It's just weird at the timing. Like we lost on Saturday, didn't we? It's just weird. But the timing of it is all weird.
It is.
Might as well have just kept Tindall to the end of the season, and then we didn't get us up, let him go.
What's really frustrating, right, for me is, you know, the club, I don't think, are amazing at PR. And they release or leak these bits of news to journalists that get the mouths watering of every single AFC Bournemouth fan. You've got Lampard being mentioned, Vieira, John Terry, not so much, Wagner. Thierry Henry. And, you know, we could go through the list of all the names. Nigel Pearson, I thought, you know, like even he would be all right. And then we're, world-class CVs. And then after the hashed three-week process, they go for the guy that was there all along. But they say that he was the best candidate for the job. Okay.
Best candidate
for the job. You said it. 50. What's that all about? Like, if he's the best candidate for the job, you give him a long, he was probably the cheap option. Absolutely nothing against Woodgate, because I wish he's the best. And he's proved himself to be good in front of the camera as well.
Yeah, like I think watching Tindall's interviews, well, I didn't watch much of them, to be fair, to watching Woodgate's, he seems like he has a philosophy there.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it didn't work at Middlesbrough. I think it might have been their playing squad, maybe. I don't know. But maybe once he's... I think it hasn't helped that it's taken this long. Because I think if if we sat Tyndall and went, right, we're just going to go with Woodgate, I feel like players would be like, right, okay, he can install whatever he wants now, get them playing how he wants. It's the uncertainty between the manager and the players.
Yeah,
and there's exactly no communication there, was there?
You hit the nail on the head, mate. You absolutely hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, we spoke today to a guy from Sky Sports who nailed it. And he said, if you're Jonathan Woodgate and you're as caretaker manager, you can't rip up a philosophy not knowing how long you'll be there. You've got to stick to what was going on. So Woodgate was never going to come in and the players all of a sudden were not going to be playing this, like, you know, sexy, brilliant football, like one touch genius football. It was always going to be just hopefully an improvement on what we had before. And to be fair, the results until the last match that Bournemouth had, which they lost at QPR, the results backed that up. The performances maybe didn't, but the results did. So now that he's got the nod for 15 games, which is, you know, not a long time to instill your philosophy. Hopefully with that little bit longer time, he can start to mould the team and play it how he wants to and just see how we do. You never know. We might be all right.
It says, like, because he had the 6-month contract anyway, didn't he? I think when I think Tyndall bought him originally.
Yes, that's right.
Because to replace Jones. And I think it's just literally to see if he can get us up. It's a win-win for the club, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Because, like, if he doesn't get us up, his contract ends, they don't have to pay him anything, I don't think.
No.
He can just go. But if he does get us up, they're going to look really clever.
I just don't like the way they badge it as being the best candidate for the job. You know, he'll give us the most stability. Like, well, if he gives us the most stability, like, why wouldn't you want that stability to last more than 15 games if that's what you're thinking? So they obviously have hashed it together.
Yeah, I think, I don't know what's happened. They either almost had someone to come and take over, but obviously something happened and when those last, because by the time he was appointed, he's like, nah, I haven't had an interview or anything. So something must have happened in those 2 days or a day even.
I think that one of our guests on the podcast said that the board of AFC Bournemouth have got a sandbanks mentality. Sandbanks, to anyone that's listening or watching who doesn't know, I mean, it's one of the most expensive places to live in Europe or the world, I think, in terms of like the price per square meter of land or whatever. But and sometimes I think that they've got maybe delusions of grandeur and they saw all these names that were coming in, CVs, and thought, oh my God, like, yeah, you know, let's interview these. But then they quickly realized that the demands of these people are just, they don't tessellate with the kind of like assets that we've got. They probably wanted big, long contracts. They wanted money to spend and they wanted to be paid really well on a lengthy contract. And they suddenly realized, actually, maybe not. It could be an expensive mistake. Why not give it to the guy that's got it already? Because he's nice and cheap. And then if it does go wrong, we can always start again next season. So it is a win-win for him to choose Woodgate. But it feels like another gamble in terms of if he does pull it off and get us to the Premier League, they would be the luckiest board alive. I'm telling you now. They would be so fortunate. But chances are we probably won't get promoted, and then we'll start again next season with a new manager in the Championship.
Do you think it will be a new manager, or do you think we'd give it? I suppose, say if we did get into the playoffs, got to the playoff final and lost,
yeah,
that's a different one. That's, how do you look at that?
It all depends if the team are showing promise. Now, if we were to get to the playoff final, I think, you know, we'd have had to have a good run in terms of the league to actually sustain our position in the league, because we are dropping like a stone at the moment, and any more defeats and we'll be out of the playoffs. So if we put a run together and we make the playoffs, then they might be considering, actually, he could be the one. I just think they want to see signs of you know, good football. But the thing is, if we do stay in the Championship, half these good footballers will go anyway into the Premier League. So then I don't know what happens. It depends then what's Woodgate's transfer policy like. But then, hang on, he's a head coach, so he doesn't make the decisions. It's someone else, the director of football, that does it. And just like, I don't know what's going on. It is.
Yeah, it's just frustrating, isn't it? Like, we've obviously gone down the head coach route, and that's how we're doing things now, and doesn't always work out.
It's like, yeah,
we're sort of turning into like other clubs, aren't we? Because we were so well run ever since Eddie stepped back in. We were, because obviously he did everything. So, and now we just, as soon as he left, it just went.
I know, and that's
that way a little bit, because obviously something was happening in the time when we got relegated. But as soon as he left, it was just.
That's my fear, that we're just going to turn into a team like Watford that's just hire and fire, which we could do. That's the kind of head coach mentality. Problem is, when you've got a head coach, like, they're always the fall guy, and it's not the people above them, the chief exec, the director of football. And ultimately those guys are more responsible than, you know, it's almost like they're bulletproof at the moment. And, you know, they do need to take some stick over the way they've dealt with this whole saga. I would love there to be a bit more transparency than what there is, but there never is. You'll never see a chief exec being interviewed for any club. So it's all very much smoke and mirrors, and it's the manager or the head coach that is the first person to get fired, and ultimately they're responsible. So I feel for Woodgate, because he's in a tough situation. But ultimately, if the guy wants to stay at the club, he's got to get us Premier League football. So, you know, the pressure's on him, but it's a positive challenge for him, and I'm sure he'll be handsomely rewarded financially if he does get us there.
Yeah, I just can't see it at the moment, because we're just not.
Nah.
We're just like watching. It's like watching paint dry at the moment. It's just nothing's nothing's going. Like, admittedly, bar Saturday, we were really good defensively, I think. But obviously, Mepham had his little mistake.
Yeah.
And it was a mistake. It happens.
Yeah.
We move on.
Yeah.
And that, but that's football. But other than that, I think we've been quite solid. But I don't know if that's going to take away the attacking intent that we always had.
Yeah. Defensively, we have been good, and we've been good based on a pairing that's been thrown together a few games ago in Carter Vickers and Lloyd Kelly that were doing well. And then all of a sudden, it becomes a three at the back instead of the. And then it's the guy that comes in that makes the mistake. And I feel for the guy, because he's only doing what he's been told to do in terms of playing it out. But yeah, when you've got more defenders, but you know, it's a statistical fact that there's more chance of a mistake being made, and it happened to Chris Mepham, and then the manager get a stick. But a part of me thinks, you know, Woodgate probably did that because playing three at the back, because if we won the game, he would look like a genius. Like, oh yeah, like, you know, like he countered them really well, and he won us the game by, you know, deploying a different formation. And you just think to yourself, well, like, he's now got the job anyway. He's got the job after a loss. So it's all very much up in the air, mate, at the moment. I just hoping somehow we can get a playoff spot. And if our form is good as we go into that, you know, those final three games, the two playoff matches in Wembley, you never know.
No, you don't. Those games are very much, I think, form is like, you look at form over a season, don't you?
Yeah.
And I think with the playoff games, it just goes out the window for me. Like, who turns up on the day and who can handle the pressure, innit?
If you know what, I've got a nightmare scenario. We play Watford, who we always do. Up pops Dan Gosling in the 89th minute, doing what he does, late goals. Mate, I can just see it now. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but, you know, like, us and Watford seem to be like, you know, the ugly sisters from Cinderella. Like, we're just relentlessly together. So whatever they do, we do. So, if we end up in a playoff final, that would be squeaky bum time, because one of us we'll have to go up to another division. I just hope it will be us. But based on the moment, it won't be us.
They've picked up a bit, haven't they?
They beat someone heavily
the other day. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Bristol City.
Bristol City was, yeah. Yeah. 6-1 or something. That would have been us.
If we were playing Watford, that would have been us.
Yeah. Exactly. So there is, you know, there's time to turn it around. There's even time to earn automatic promotions. But these next two matches for Bournemouth, they're absolutely massive. It's
Cardiff,
huge games.
And
Watford.
Oh, brilliant.
Cardiff is the archetypal six pointer. So they're 3 points behind, and it's either going to be 0 or 6 or 3 if we draw, but that is going to be a tasty game because they've picked up.
That's a defining season one.
Yeah, it could be. And you know what? Cardiff have got Mick McCarthy in as manager, who's like a dinosaur in football. Yeah, he's got them playing. He's a disciplinarian. And that's why I wasn't adverse to someone like Nigel Pearson, who's now ended up at Bristol City as well. So, yeah. A lot of hard work to do, and if we can, you know, if we can start getting a couple of wins together, the players are, you know, a bunch that seem to thrive on confidence. Get people back like Solanke and Steve Cook, and you never know.
No, we could do it.
We've seen flashes, but we just need to see it more.
What do you think of? To be fair, I'm going to praise Woodgate here. I do like that he drops people, like he dropped Dan Juma the other day.
Yeah,
who has been shocking. He is someone that leaves the same hype, isn't he? And then when he put on the captain's band, which admittedly that was quite funny. But, but at the same time, he's just like, no, and he's obviously just thinks he's too good for this league. Doesn't he? Same with Brooks, really.
They have
to result to the old guard like Stanislas.
Yeah.
Coming in.
They're players that believe they're Premier League players without having to prove the fact that they can get to the Premier League. So they just, and, you know, they rock up and, you know, Dan Juma is such a frustrating player. We've seen how good he can be. Yeah. David Brooks, we know his quality. Chatting to Simon Francis the other night, he said he's the most natural talent he's ever played with at AFC Bournemouth. You're thinking, well, I've not really seen that this season. It's laziness. I think there's not the drive to get promoted. I don't know why other clubs like Watford and Norwich are doing so well, because their players just know that, you know, they're playing for each other, whereas ours are playing independently. Yeah, for themselves, knowing that, well, if we don't get promoted with Bournemouth, it doesn't matter because someone's going to pick me up anyway. So, you know, just like happened with Callum Wilson and all the rest that left. So.
It's just a bit of a mess at the moment, isn't it? It's just, in a way, it sounds bad, but kind of want this season to be like done with, because it hasn't been enjoyable, has it? I know it's different because we all can't be there, but watching us has been boring.
It has
slow.
I think also not being able to be there has been massive. I mean, I know that all clubs are having this issue, but for a side like Bournemouth that relies on its fans so much in terms of generating the noise inside the stadium, I think it's been such a huge loss. It has not been fun to be having to hook up the laptop via HDMI cable to the TV every bloody weekend. It's horrible to do that. Paying £10 for the privilege of, you know, last week it was some Queen's Park Rangers commentator I had to listen to rather than, you know, our own guys. And it's been a hard season, and I worry about the future if we don't get promoted this season.
Yeah, I'm not that bad at the moment, but I think it depends what happens via the management situation, I think.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's hard. It depends how much, who goes, etc. I know, like, the majority of that starting 11 will leave.
Yeah.
But Steve Cook, Adam Smith, Stanislas, those type players.
Yeah, your Lermas, Philip Billing, Dan Juma, Brooks, maybe even Dom Solanke. Lloyd Kelly will be wanting to try to get a Premier League football somewhere.
Him, didn't they?
Yeah, and
somehow we managed to sign him instead of Liverpool. But
then all those players that we've just mentioned are ones that haven't been performing this season. So do I care? Not really. I'll be happy to, you know, start again and sort of almost, you know, transition to a new squad next season, just see how we do.
Did you think this is why we should have kept like a Forbra, maybe, in case this did happen?
Yeah, funny really, because I feel for the youth this season, because this is one where we've relentlessly relied on these big name players that we think can, you know, can hack life in the Championship and that can, you know, look good in the Championship. And they're Premier League players that are applying their trade in the second tier. They should be head and shoulders above the rest. They're not, because they're complacent. Now, people that wouldn't be complacent are the young lads like Jadon Anthony, Jordan Zamora, Gavin Kilkenny, etc.
Kilkenny is
and off
one
the ball.
Of the best chances I've probably seen. Yeah. He's phenomenal.
Yet they're not getting games because of the pressure to get back up to the Premier League. So, you know, the amount of stick that JT would have got for playing Kilkenny in midfield, and that's getting pounded in a match when you've got the likes of Lerma and Philip Billing on the bench, Lewis Cook, he's in a difficult position. It's only matches where...
Yeah, I think that's why cup games are good.
Yeah, and it's only matches where we smashed aside, like Huddersfield, where he can risk that 16-year-old lad, Birch or whatever. And, you know, like even in that match, I felt sorry for Kilkenny. Like, how come he didn't come on? Like, it's almost just a bit showy by putting a 16-year-old on. That, you know, look what we're doing here. But it's, you know, it doesn't mean anything because you're not playing them in any other game. So you know, why did you even do that? Seems a bit bizarre to
me. That same 16-year-old who's probably going to leave anyway. So
exactly. So, yeah.
And he's touted for Arsenal, isn't he? So
yeah, that's it.
And like, what do you think of Wiltshire coming back? Because obviously that was mad, but I know it's hard because he hasn't been playing football for a while, so that's a hard one. But it just looks like the rest of them, doesn't he?
We all know that he's a quality player that's got a lot of technical ability, but I don't know. I think players that have got that kind of swagger and that style tend to stick out like a sore thumb when the rest of the side are having bad games. So you look at him and also he's a player that we all think is you know, going to be really effective. And when they're ineffective, you realise it more. Whereas if there's a player like Steve Cook that's, you know, just doing what he's doing and like he doesn't sort of pull up any trees and he has an okay game, then you don't really realise it. Whereas if there's like Wilshire who's not really doing it, you realise it more just because you know the quality they got. Sure, so yeah. I think it was an interesting signing. It was one that, you know, looked really good for us. But when you've got the rest of your teammates not playing for each other, then think as it is. He can't carry everyone.
No, it's just a shame really what's happened. But I'm sure in a couple of games' time we'll know what's you know where we are, etc.
Woodgate
will know where he is, even though the 15 game thing. You know, it's all just ridiculous.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. But you know what? I'm a fan regardless.
Yeah, sorry. Always. I was just going to say, is anyone you, if it didn't work out for Woodgate, do you have a particular person you'd want to come in?
Well, if we're going to do what the club does, it's surely got to be Stephen Purchase isn't it? And after that, it'll be Sean Cooper. And then after that, it'll be Warren Cummings. And then after that, it'll be... you know what?
I think that's the problem. I think that is... We need to stop this thing.
Yeah.
Because if they were like different coaches under different managers and they all weren't playing the same, didn't have the same philosophy as Eddie has.
Yeah.
then I feel it could work. But because they're all under Eddie,
yeah,
and then like, it's going to be the same thing, isn't it?
I can't speak for the performance coaches and the analysts and fitness people, but in terms of the you know, the coaches that we've got, they're not Premier League quality. And we know that because we've seen the standard that they played at. And, I think that Eddie Howe carried a lot of people, and a lot of people would have been redundant had it not been for like Eddie Howe, you know, basically pulling us up through the leagues. In terms of a new name, I would have liked to have had David Wagner, but I'm sure he's going to get snapped up by someone else soon. I wouldn't be surprised. One of the people that I would have loved was Slavisa Jokanovic, the Watford manager that was in charge when they got promoted with us. They didn't win the championship. We did, of course. And weirdly, after they did get promoted to the Premier League, he got sacked. Like Watford mentality. They've just won promotion to the Premier League. And then next month, sacked. No idea why. He went to Fulham.
Did we win it on goal difference or is it? Or is it a point? I can't remember.
A point or something. Yeah, I think we're on 98 points. Or something. No, it was 98 goals. It was 90 or 91 points or whatever. But yeah, I would have quite liked to have him in because I think he did okay at Fulham. Not brilliant, but, you know, at Watford, I thought he did really well. And, I'd just love someone like him in. But yeah, who knows?
I know we really want Scott Parker.
Yeah, we do.
And we tried to, we thought we could get him from Fulham for some reason. I think they probably timed it where they thought, oh, he might get sacked.
Exactly that.
And then we sacked him and then maybe we can get but it hasn't really panned out for them, which is...
That's what they were hoping, yeah.
Bad thinking from the club, I think.
That's what they were hoping. But now Fulham are just 3 points behind Newcastle and they're putting some wins together and, you know, they're doing all right. But firstly, they were hoping that Fulham would lose to Brentford in the playoff final. Mm. Fulham beat them.
Yeah, because
that got promoted to the Premier League. And,
Fulham
and
get promoted, we go for.
And Scott Parker wasn't overly happy at that time. Some of his post-match interviews, he didn't look incredibly happy, but he got his side promoted. Mm. And he's doing well there. And I think it was Richard Hughes that was the one that was almost priming him to be AFC Bournemouth manager, but it didn't quite work out. And he's doing all right at Fulham. And, you know, he's doing very well there. And I'd have taken him all day long.
Mm.
Absolutely.
100%. Yeah,
probably unlikely now.
Yeah, probably not. Unless they go on a bad run of form and then he does get sacked, but I don't think he will. I just keep him, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like they made a really good signing, the striker. You think he was at Sunderland? I remember him watching on the... I could be really wrong there. I can't remember his name.
No, you're right. I can't remember who it is either. But you know what? There's it's quite interesting watching the Premier League as just like a football fan this year and not having a vested interest in it. It's just, you know, I turn on Match of the Day as like entertainment rather than last season. I would only watch if we won because I just couldn't stand it otherwise.
Yeah,
so I'm actually watching more football as a result of it. So it's not a bad thing.
Do you prefer Championship or Premier League? Like, I know it's that old thing saying that, like Championship because you're winning, like apart from this season where we're not that good.
But yeah.
Do you have a preference between the two?
I think that the phrase, the journey is better than the destination, is never more appropriate than when it's the Championship going to the Premier League, because Championship is one of the most exciting leagues in the world. Mm-hmm. You've got more games under the lights. You've got your Saturday matches. You've got your Tuesday night matches. You've got a variation of different stadia. You've got huge, massive grounds to go to. You've got historical ones like the City Ground for Nottingham, and you've got the smaller clubs like Rotherham, and you've got teams like Wickham, and such a variation. And it's a brilliant division, but it's not the one that will earn you big money. And ultimately, you've got to go through to the Premier League and play the top six, which, you know, they're basically just a league in their own. You might as well,
The Premier League is three leagues in the league, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, it is. And so you look at it and you write games off even before you've started.
It's like
You might pick up the odd win,
we never
but
beat Man City, did we?
no. Man City, we never beat in the Premier League. Wolves, we never beat in the Premier League either. In fact, Sheffield United, we didn't beat in the Premier League too either because
Wow.
we drew with them and lost at their place. But then you've got VAR. You've got, and that's horrible. You've got sneering media pundits like Adrian Durham that are currently, they're always causing, the equivalent of clickbaity stories on like Twitter and on like social media and these little clippets that they, grab out of their radio shows where they're just making a controversial point just for the sake of it, patronising AFC Bournemouth. You get people like Martin Keown saying, Bournemouth need to change their style. Bournemouth need to change their style. We don't change our style and we stay in the Premier League. And it's like, oh, well done, Eddie Howe. Like, changing your opinion every week. Why did Eddie Howe need to change his style? But Bielsa for Leeds,
Oh
people
God,
praise him every week
the
and it's
media
no
love for
different at
Leeds
all.
is ridiculous.
It's, yeah.
But it's
It's
Leeds, isn't it?
just mad. Yeah.
Oh God,
Crazy.
it's all ridiculous, isn't it? It's just
Yeah.
because it has Premier League, especially like I feel like football is getting further and further away from fans.
Yeah.
It's I know like it's hard because we're not there at the moment, but. I feel
Yeah,
like
the
clubs
prem
could do a lot more than they do. And
Yeah.
I know the club do a lot with like, I don't know if other clubs do it. They probably do, but like Steve Cook winning up fans, that's a good little touch.
Yeah.
And that, but I don't know. Is anything more than that?
No, that there's I think the clubs when they go to the Premier League, they do lose their soul a little bit and fans become customers and there is more of a distance. Credit to Bournemouth though, in that they were wary of that. And they one of the pre-seasons invited a number of fans to meet Eddie and Jason, who were in charge at the time, and chat to them about how do we make it less of a a separate thing because we're aware that being in the Premier League, people feel very distanced from us, and we don't want that. We want to improve the match day experience, and we want to help people feel more part of the club when they arrive on a match day. And so, certain clubs are able to do that and still maintain it. But then, if you are a fan of like Arsenal or Chelsea or whatever,
Yeah, it's
you've
just
got
not
no
even on
idea
it.
what it's like supporting a proper football club because it's they're just a, they're just a number on a database. They're not a person. They're just a figure, that turns up and has got a season ticket that costs over a grand. It's like, yeah, they haven't really been there and done it.
No, they haven't. It's just and I quite like the fact our stadium is small as well.
I love it. Yeah.
Like with that close to the players and that. Like if you go to like one of the big teams, you could be like miles away, so to
Yeah.
speak.
And people take the piss. I mean, people come down here and they say, my garden shed is bigger than this. And they'll,
Yeah.
they'll sing all the songs, but they love it because of how close they are to the pitch. And it's a smaller stadium. It generates a good atmosphere. And I love it. Yeah, it does need to be slightly bigger, but, it's our
Yes.
home and I kind of quite like it.
I don't think I'd change it. If we were like to get a new stadium, which it's not gonna happen now, I don't think.
Not for a long time, no.
But I know the route we would go. We would just go into like a, they call them soulless bowls, don't they?
Yeah.
And that, I think that's what we go to.
Yeah. Just an identikit stadium is like made out of Lego somewhere on a retail park out of town.
Kind of like
No pubs
Brighton's.
nearby, nothing there. That's where it's going to be. It's
No,
like,
like the Amex, isn't it? Amex. It's just,
the Amex, yeah.
yeah, just in the middle. Nice stadium, to be fair, but it's just in the middle of nowhere, really. Nothing around
Yeah,
it.
absolutely nothing there, and it's a shame. There are teams that I was really looking forward to getting back to watch away games. I mean, not so much Brentford. I mean, Brentford have got a new stadium, but they had a pub on every corner, and there are old school grounds like Luton, and a perverse part of me actually doesn't want to get relegated just so there's a chance to do those kind of away days next season. But obviously the financial stability of the club is my first and foremost thought. So I would, of course, like us to get promoted. But if not, we've got some good away days to come next season.
Yeah, indeed. Well, on that note, thank you for coming on, Sam. Appreciate it. If you've ever fancy listening or watching the Back of the Net podcast, you can find it everywhere. It's always a good watch. And yeah, thank you for listening, guys. Thank you very much. Cheers.